Ron Ananian.
You know, it's funny. You drive around, and you can drive. It's sort of very pleasurable to drive, especially in New Jersey. It seems that as the roads are empty, so are empty of the people that don't know how to use directionals, stop signs. You know, you get it.
The car doctor, Elon Musk, still thinks he's the guy. And maybe he is. He's got some really cool ideas. He's a showman. You know, he's just trying to stand out in high school. He's just trying to be that quarterback that throws a touchdown every week.
Ever hear of Al Bundy? Poke high, all city, four touchdowns in one game?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I guess we'll start here, okay? Start at the beginning. That's always the best place. You ever think that, you know, what you're doing isn't the right thing for a living and you sort of wonder and scratch your head and well, you know what? I'm fortunate. I sort of know. I know what I know what I know, and I know what I'm doing is right. And I can prove it. And it might even make you laugh, so stick around for a minute. Had a 2015 Subaru in the shop this week. And it was Subaru week at the shop. It really was. I haven't figured out why, but there was a ton of Subarus. You know, maybe their marketing department is more on keel than everybody else's was 5-6 years ago, because it seems like at the time everybody was buying Subies, and you know, we're starting to see more and more of them in the shop. So this particular 15 Forester had about 95,000 miles on it, and the customer complaint was doing 65 miles an hour going into a slow, gentle turn. The steering wheel would kind of do the hula, blah, 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 back and forth, right? And we, you know, took it out, road test, verified it. Yeah, it does it. Okay, good. Bring it back, look the car over, and the right lower control arm, the front bushing on the control arm, was smoked. I mean, gone. You know, it left, and it just gave no forwarding address. So at 95,000 miles, 5 years old, it's a five-year-old vehicle. You know, you're going to do one bushing, you're going to do both bushings, you're going to do a control arm. Well, experience is always a great thing. Experience has taught me on Subarus, when you're trying to take apart the front suspension, that lower ball joint's a little bit persnickety. And getting it out of the control arm usually takes some persuasion. You know what persuasion is, right? It comes in the form of maybe a 3, a 5, or a 7-pound mallet. And sometimes it comes in the form of the tanks, because you're gonna tank it, you're gonna heat it up and use the hot wrench. So, you know, let's do a control arm. Called up Subaru, they had it in stock. Gee, what a surprise! And they said, gee, you know, sometimes we just do bushings. I go, yeah. And then when do you sell the guy the ball joint? Oh, and we can't get it apart. Good. I'm just gonna tell him right up front he needs a ball joint and two bushings and get this over with. So we order the control arm. Control arm's on its way. Danny pulls it in. We take it apart. We attempt to take it apart. The ball joint on a Subaru is pressed up into the hub or knuckle assembly, and 5 years of North Jersey roads, like anywhere else in the Rust Belt, even though I know we're not really probably immersed in the Rust Belt as some other places I can think of, but it's enough, right? New Jersey, you know, we have to put down the roads and keep them clear because we're so afraid we can't get out for our cup of coffee with our four-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, automatic, go-anywhere vehicles. And it just corroded the heck out of this ball joint. This ball joint was stuffed into this hub. It didn't want to come out to save its life. Here's the trick, all right? This is why, you know, this is why I do what I do, I guess. You know, my wife says, you know what, you're good at what you do. You should realize that. And she's right. I sat there and I took the hot torch and heated the knuckle, but just enough. And naturally, the ball joint rubber boot melted. There wasn't anything I can do about that. But the CV boot for the drive axle was about a half inch away. I was able to heat it slowly, let it cool, heat it a little bit more, let it cool, walked it through a couple of hot and cold cycles, let it warm up, let it cool down, let it warm up, let it cool down. Shot a little PB blaster on the last cold cycle up into the portion where the ball joint was sitting in the bottom of the knuckle, and waited. Oh, gave it, you know, 8 minutes, 9 minutes, let it soak its way through, tapped around the hub with the hammer, nothing crazy, just this little three-pounder, and watched the PB as it kind of came out and, you know, oozed itself out between the ball joint and the hub, and then I knew. And then I just, you know, I just took the hammer and it popped out. So I told you that story because, yeah, listen, I'm good at it. I mean, that's what I'm supposed to be able to do, right? 43 years fixing cars, 45 years fixing cars. Can't do math. 45 years fixing cars, 1978. Yeah, whatever. I told you that story to tell you this one. This is why I know I should be a mechanic. I was working in the shed this morning. I'm getting the garden ready. You know, it's time, right? We're going to start planting. And I'm cleaning up the shed in the back of the house. And I picked up, I never saw that snake before, like, holy smokes. I picked up this piece of plywood, and this snake stood up and went right at me. Boy, did it scare the bejesus out of me. course, you know, poor thing, I dropped the board on it because it scared me so bad. I dropped the board, I knocked it out, and I was able to then pick it up with the end of a rake, and it was, you know, kind of limp, and I took it outside and let it sit in the sun for about 10 minutes, and then it sort of, you know, woke up, and, you know, I must have knocked it out when I hit it with the plywood when I dropped it, when it scared me, and it slithered away. My wife came out. She says, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm trying to be a farmer, but, you know, it's not really working today." Okay. And, you know, I told her the story, and she said, "Well, you see, that's just God in the universe showing you that you're a really good mechanic and that you're an okay farmer, but you got to learn how to deal with snakes and mice. And if you get better at it, then you'll be able to do it on a continuous basis." And I said, "You're right, honey. What else would I think, right?" But true story. Here's the addendum to that, right? I'm cleaning up the shed before I come into studio to get ready to do the show. And that's when I found the mouse that the snake was sitting there waiting to eat. Of course, the mouse was dead, and now so was the... Well, I'm not sure what happened with the snake. So I took the mouse, picked it up with the shovel, threw that off in the distance, and I'll get my lawn equipment squared away, and we'll talk about maybe tuning that stuff up next week. But, yeah, I can take a torch. I can put it within a quarter of an inch of a rubber object, not melt the rubber object, get the ball joint out that's rusted in after 5 years of North Jersey roads. I see a snake, I fall to pieces. Just not my thing. I know what I'm doing is the right thing. I know I'm supposed to fix cars. That's what I do. And if you're new to this radio show, that's what you're here for. You're here to get your car fixed. And 855-560-9900, I should point out, is 24/7. You can call, leave a message, and Tom Ray, executive producer, will get you in the queue for the next live broadcast. Last week, Linda from Florida called. And it was a Subaru. Gee, it was a Subaru again. See, a lot of Subarus. Remember, she had the 2017 Subaru, and she was having the problem where the car was shutting down and the traction control, the electronic eye, and the crash avoidance system stopped working. And I gave her some things to check and, you know, some generalities of what to look for. And I couldn't really get her to where I wanted her to be because I just didn't have enough information, and I just needed to dwell on it. And she was going to call me back this week, and I haven't heard from her, so I'm assuming the car is fixed. But I'll tell you what happened. We were having Sunday supper last week, and my wife made turkey, gravy, and mashed potatoes. It was just, you know, we're doing that. We're having Thanksgiving in May, and the gravy steamed my glasses, and I had to take my glasses off to clean them, and I put my glasses back on. And I could see, and I went, holy cow, my eyes are so much better now. I can actually see what I'm doing. And it just, like, snapped into my head. I knew what was wrong with Lucy, Linda. I can't remember if it was Lucy or Linda. I remembered what was wrong with her car. The problem was, and I sent her a note on Facebook, and I said, by chance, because the car was never in an accident, I said, by chance, was the windshield ever replaced? She writes me back, yeah, it was. It had a stone chip, and we replaced the windshield, but my husband didn't. I said, okay, was the car calibrated? Did you recalibrate the automatic driver assist system, the ADAS? And she said, no, my husband said the car was running fine, and even though he was told to do that, he didn't want to spend the money. Guess what fixed the car? That's where I'm going to leave it. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, too, down around the bottom of the hour. We've got George Lesniak. He is director of training for Autel, but he's also their national trainer for ADAS, the system that went out of calibration on that particular Subaru. And I thought we really should talk about it a little bit, because you need to understand that so many finer points of cars today are affected by little things. Incorrect length wiper blades will cause the electronic eye or the crash avoidance system to not operate properly. A windshield replacement or a windshield not made to manufacturer spec, where the vision's a little blurry like my eye was from the steam from the gravy. So all of this is going to come into play in the car in the future that you're probably driving right now. So, you know, stick around. I want you to hear that. We're going to do that. And then, of course, we're going to open the garage doors when I return. So let me pull over, take the pause. I'll be back right after this.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Let's get over and talk to Alex in Connecticut. Alex, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
How are you today?
Good. How are you? What's going on, Alex?
I'm doing well. So I have a 2009 Tacoma that needed some new leaf springs. So did some research online, found some aftermarket leaf springs that I wanted to go with, had decent reviews. Went to go put them in and got the old ones out and was hooking them up to where the shackles connect to the frame there. And there's a decent amount of play in between where the bushing is and the shackle.
Okay.
And otherwise, the leaf springs fit. They fit lengthwise. So I called the manufacturer, and they basically said, they said they hadn't heard of that happening before, but they suggested putting in washers on either side of the bushing. And I was wondering if that was just generally a good idea, or if it was safe to do, or whether I should be doing
so
that or not.
So what you're telling me is the spring isn't as wide as the shackle.
Yeah, basically, like the bushing on the old bushings on the old leaf springs are a little bit wider, and these ones are a little bit
narrower.
Thinner. They
right.
don't poke
they're,
out as much.
Right, they're a little narrower. So what? Where? Well, my concern is the up and down movement. As the vehicle travels and moves up and down, it's going to be wearing on that washer. You're going to have direct metal contact with the washer to the outside of the shackle, so you're just going to be grinding against the steel. Now,
yeah.
At what point, it's kind of a hokey way to do it, all right?
I agreed, yeah, so I just kind of wanted to get an opinion.
You know, it'll work, but, you know, why? I think the manufacturer is really obligated to give you an explanation, something better than just shim it out with a set of washers. And then you've got to ask yourself, you're not the first guy to buy this set of leaf springs trying to put it on a 09 Tacoma, why is yours different? Is there something different about yours? Do you have the right factory shackle? You know, are you the original owner? Was the car ever in an accident? You know, you start to think through all that stuff in your head too. You know, that what made it so unique and different that it happened that way to you? So,
yeah.
You know, the only other thing you could do is, have you taken a picture of the original springs and the old and the new springs?
No.
So why don't you take a picture
really.
Of the new spring, the old spring, show it to the manufacturer and say, this is what I have, this is what you sold me, and, you know, maybe measure it. Can you measure the outside distance or width of that, you know, bushing to bushing on old, bushing to bushing on new, and how big of a difference is it? Because that's, you know, if it's...
Yeah, I did that when I was trying to get it in, and it's a decent amount, probably about
quarter
of an inch to half an inch.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot, you know.
So,
that
not enough for the shackle to bend in. That's one thing that I was hoping could happen, but
right.
The shackle wouldn't, it wouldn't be able to bend enough.
Yeah, it's not supposed to have to bend in.
exactly.
You know, dopey question on my part. The shackle isn't concave in one direction where you could flip it around the other way, could you?
No.
Okay. So then if you were going to have to do this and make this work, what I would do is, so that you don't have the washer laying against the shackle and, you know, take your hands like two palms together and just rotate them against each other. My fear is you're going to get that grinding action all the while this vehicle is running down the road. I would try and build up the gap of the shackle by maybe weld a washer to the shackle. So now the washer is fixed solid to the shackle, and then it will wear against the rubber bushing, and you'd be restoring that dimension back to the spec that the factory wanted it to be.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
There. Yeah, no, it does.
You know, this way you're not letting anything grind itself away. Just, you know, realize what you're doing is you're gonna ruin that factory shackle for any other spring.
Yeah.
So if you ever go to change that spring again in the future, now you're gonna have to buy a set of shackles as well. But I would call them on it. I would really call on the manufacturer and say, you know, what's up?
I went through that route, and they basically said I would have to pay for shipping to send them back, and that's another $100 out of my pocket. And then they were being a little bit problematic.
What brand was this, Alex?
General Springs out of Kansas City.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, not a national brand, not anything I've ever heard of. You could try this.
Unfortunately, there weren't many on aftermarket options that were stock options for Toyota Tacomas. They all had lifts built in, from what I could find.
Yeah, everybody wants.
Unless I wanted to go OEM, and those are $500 a spring, which I really didn't want to go down that road.
It's amazing what leaf springs cost. It's really crazy. A friend of mine's got an 86 Suburban 2500 big block car, and we put new leaf springs in it for him 2 weeks ago. The set of leaf springs was $320 a piece.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy money. Crazy money for a 30-year-old, 40-year-old vehicle that's what happens. So that's what happens. Do that, though. Figure out your dimension and, you know, shim it, okay? Put it together, bolt it together once, twice, three times, whatever. Get it to the point where it's snug but not crushing the rubber but just making contact. And then just tack weld it to the inside of the shackle. You'll have to do the inside of the shackle, the outside of the shackle. This way the spring stays centered, and you'll fix what their mistake was.
That's a good idea. Thank you.
All right, you're very welcome, Alex. You're very welcome. You take good care. Keep on going. I don't like that when manufacturers do that. You know, we say that all the time, that they go through the pain of making the part. Can't they make the part, you know, they go the 90 percentile. Can't they go to the, you know, go the 10% more and make it right? I just got a fuel getting hard to for the Monte Carlo from a manufacturer, and they're getting hard to find. I have a single line setup and so on and so forth. And the angle of the sock leading up to the sender, you know, there's like a 15-degree kick in it where there wasn't in the factory. I don't even know if it's going to work. I'm probably going to have to take it apart and bend it back and, you know, make my own part, which is welcome to hot rodding. So, just part of the deal. So, Alex, you keep going, brother, and keep the faith. You'll figure it out, and it's good experience. It's character building, as we like to say. Hey, coming up next, George Lesniak, Director of Training for Autel regarding ADAS systems. You got a self-driving car, you've got a crash avoidance system, you want to stick around and hear what George has to say. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. A week ago, last Sunday, and we were having family dinner, and I was still thinking about the previous day's show because I guess my mind is always working. And when I had to clear my glasses and my eyes blinked, I knew what was wrong with the Subaru from Florida that had the crash avoidance system problem. And sure enough, after talking with the caller, I contacted her via Facebook. She assured me that, yes, the windshield had been replaced, and no, the system was not recalibrated as the manufacturer recommended because it seemed to be working. I can't explain it any better than, and I wanted to explain this, but I thought you might want to hear from an industry expert on the subject. George Lesniak, he is the Director of Training for Autel regarding ADAS, and George is here to talk to us about it. And I thought you might like to hear it right from the top of the tree. George, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir.
Thanks, Ron.
You've heard the story. You know, you kind of know how you got here, right? It was turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy that brought you to the show today.
Exactly right.
Tell everybody. Let's start at the top. What does ADAS stand for?
So ADAS is Advanced Driver Assistance Systems. These are the the different features and functions in a car that warn you when you're veering out of a lane, or when there's a car on the side of you and you try to change lanes, or that fancy cruise control that speeds up and slows down when cars cut in front of you. So all of these assistance systems designed to help the driver pilot their vehicle more safely, but also make driving more comfortable on, especially on long trips.
And this is really not something completely new, right, George? This is in cars for the past 4 or 5 years?
Actually, in the United States, it goes back to the year 2000. Back then, it was only on some very high-end vehicles, and they were costly options. But ADAS has been around the United States for 20 years now, and even longer in Europe. So no, this isn't brand new. It really hit the mainstream in the U.S. around 2014 and has been growing every year since then.
And chances are quite a few of the listeners out there today have an ADAS system in their vehicle, and they're not even aware of it.
Exactly right. Yeah. You know, things as simple as a backup camera or the parking sensors that tell you when you get too close to a car. Those are some very basic forms of ADAS systems.
So our Subaru in Florida, she had the windshield replaced and then the system every once in a while, twice I believe it happened to her, where the vehicle went into limp mode, dashboard lights on, ABS, traction control, loss of steering and driver assist electronic eye fault lights came on from a recalibration because the windshield was replaced. George, tell us why it's possible.
Okay, that's actually a great question, and this is one of the big issues that we're facing in the industry, and not just with consumers, but with repair shops and everything in between, is a lack of awareness of exactly what ADAS systems are and how they work, and how we, whether as drivers, vehicle owners, or as technicians, when we service these vehicles, how we are directly impacting the way these systems operate. So you look at the system that Subaru has. They call it EyeSight. It has a stereo or two-lens camera mounted behind the windshield. And those cameras are watching everything that's happening in front of the vehicle, watching the lane lines, watching for vehicles in traffic, watching for pedestrians. And the software in the vehicle uses that input coming in from the cameras to make decisions. Decisions like warning the driver when they're getting too close to a lane line, or when they get too close to a car in front of them and they're not slowing down, it gives them a warning, what's called crash protection or forward collision warning. So in order for these systems to function properly, two things need to occur. One, the camera, in this case of the Subaru, needs to be able to see clearly. So something as simple as dirt or bugs on the windshield could actually cause these systems to malfunction, or objects on the dash that could reflect into the windshield could cause the cameras to either not work or work improperly. In the case of changing a windshield, what happens is, in the case of a Subaru specifically, and I don't want to get too in depth, but the camera is actually mounted to the headliner in the vehicle, in the inside roof of the vehicle. It's not mounted to the windshield.
Right.
But the windshield acts as a lens. Think of it as going to an eye doctor, and you're sitting down, and they ask you, as he flips between different samples, what's better, one or two? Two or three, and you got to ask and answer questions, and you get a new pair of glasses at the end. Well, what happened to this Subaru is we gave it a new pair of glasses, but we never taught it to see through that new lens, the replacement windshield. So the camera still believes that the original windshield is in place, and after a period of time, it starts to say, wait a minute, I'm not seeing things properly, so it shuts down. And when it shuts down, all of the associated systems that work together, the lane departure warning, the lane keeping assist, adaptive cruise control, forward collision warning, they all shut off, and then you get the warnings on the dash. So the way to prevent that is, after services like having a windshield replaced, a calibration of that camera is necessary to teach the camera, one, how to see through the new windshield, but also, in case the position of the camera has been changed, to re-aim the camera so it can see the right spot further down the road.
George, that explanation was a work of art, brother. I love the way you did that.
Thank you.
But there's also reasons beyond just a windshield, right? It's in cases of wheel alignment, ADAS systems may require calibration too, correct?
Exactly. And this is another area of lack of awareness. And again, you can't blame the consumer for not knowing, because they weren't properly instructed on the use of these systems when the car was purchased, especially if they purchased the vehicle pre-owned. And you take a vehicle to a shop, you mentioned wheel alignment. So wheel alignment changes the direction in which the vehicle is driving. The cameras and the radar sensors that are utilized by these advanced driver assistance systems are mounted on the vehicle, so they're pointing down the center line of the vehicle. Well, if the wheels are adjusted, if the vehicle gets a wheel alignment, the center line and what's called the thrust angle, which is where the vehicle is driving, may no longer match. So after a wheel alignment, the cameras or radars need to be recalibrated to teach them or match them to the thrust angle of the vehicle.
Wow. So there's going to be nothing simple anymore. Well, there's nothing simple anymore, right, George, when it comes to cars?
No, there really isn't.
Yeah. So I'll tell you
the simplest things on cars today are computer-controlled, yeah.
And the basics of what people are trying to achieve. So for the person going for the cheap wheel alignment or just a wheel alignment, and they've got an ADAS system in the car, they're going to create their own problems. George, stay put. We're going to hold you over for a second segment. I want to talk to you a little bit about the equipment required to do such a calibration. And, you know, is it in the repair shop of the future's future, so to speak? So you stay put. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. We're talking this hour with George Lesniak. He's the Director of Training for Autel. And our subject matter today is ADAS, Advanced Driver Assist Systems. George, you're still there, sir?
Yes, I am.
So for a system, and I have to admit, I was thinking 5-6 years ADAS is out there, but, you know, 20, you're right. Not that you're probably right, you're right, because I'm thinking about the higher-end European cars that have had it for longer than that. You know, you would think an ADAS calibration by a repair shop should be a commonplace thing today, but I have a feeling you're going to tell us that it's not. And, you know, how does the repair shop get around it now? Because surely they're going to do wheel alignments. They may not all do windshield replacements, but they're going to do wheel alignments. They're going to have systems that have failures. Components are going to go bad. You know, they're going to change sensors. Oh. What do they do for calibrations?
Well, I mean, to answer the first part of your question, you're right. The vast majority of general repair shops out there are not currently performing ADAS calibrations. And it's not just wheel alignments. It could be a change in tire size, a change in ride height. You put new springs or something on a vehicle. Many vehicles today, if you change an air conditioning condenser or a radiator, you have to take the front bumper cover off. That means a radar sensor may have to be calibrated. Even the most minor collisions that require any touch of paint on a bumper may require a calibration. So, again, it comes down to a lack of awareness. Unfortunately, to this point, shops have been getting away with doing things like wheel alignments and not calibrating. But because ADAS has become such a hot topic over the past 4 or 5 years, there is now a new focus on liability for repair shops. So if something, heaven forbid, should happen, a shop performs, let's say it's a wheel alignment, they return the vehicle to the consumer, consumer takes the car out, later gets into a collision and someone's injured, that can come all the way back to the repair shop. Why didn't they properly calibrate it? So I know some shops think that they'll just tell the customer to sign a waiver. Waivers don't work.
No.
It's one thing for a shop to have a owner of a vehicle sign away their rights, but you can't sign away the rights to a person in another vehicle or a passenger in the other vehicle that gets injured.
Well, and George, the judge is going to sit there and say, you're the professional, you should know better than signing a waiver. You should repair the vehicle properly.
And you are exactly right. And that's exactly what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So for shops today, because every vehicle manufacturer has their own method for performing calibrations on their ADAS systems. That means for all the different manufacturers, you have all different kinds of camera targets, all different forms of radar calibration, all different forms of that 360 surround view calibration. So for shops, there's quite an investment in purchasing the equipment and the computerized scan tools for performing calibrations, plus all the targets and accessories. It's not a small dollar amount to be able to get into this business.
But if this is the future, this is something a shop has to look at and say, hey, if I'm going to be here in 10 years, this is the place to invest money. Because I imagine just the work from a body shop alone, never mind the wheel alignments, the sensors, the component failures, alone, that's going to be, very lucrative going forward, because so many cars are going to have this. I thought I read somewhere, and we're going to wrap it up in about a minute and a half, George, that within the next 2 years, there won't be a vehicle without ADAS. Is that true? Did I read that correctly?
That's 100% true. In September 2022, automatic emergency braking is going to be mandated by the federal government. So every vehicle, 2023 model year and newer, is going to be equipped with ADAS.
Wow. George, we're going to get you back. We have to talk some more. I'd love to do, maybe we'd shoot a video one day. I'll come out to Long Island. We'll shoot a video or something. I'd love to do something where we could show the listeners, hey, here's an ADAS calibration using the Autel equipment, because you guys are top of the field. And I think they would love to see that. So we should try to get together for that. If the listeners want more information in the meantime, what's the website again?
Autel.com.
A-U-T-E-L.
Autel.com.
George, I appreciate it. You were great, babe. All right. We'll be in touch.
Thank you, Ron.
You're very welcome, sir. You take good care. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, will be back right after this. Once again, I want to thank George Lesniak taking the time today from Autel to join us and explain about ADAS systems. And I thought to close out the hour today, what better than a Real Fix Sure Track Repair of the Week from the folks over at Mitchell One, talking about a problem with an ADAS system. Park Assist systems come in many variations. The article starts out, they're part of what is now known as ADAS, Advanced Driver Assist Systems. I learned something too, by the way. I always thought it was Automated Driver Assist Systems. So everybody, you can learn something at every age and every day of the week. Park Assist systems, the article continues, rely on various sensors to help you avoid objects while parking your car. So all those park sensors that you've got, that you're all excited to have, that beep, beep, beep and warn you when you're near the garage or the garbage cans or the car in the other lane, that's ADAS. It's as simple as that. This particular car was a 2007 BMW 530 XI. I'm sure there's a few computers on this thing. It had a trouble code 9E39 describing a faulty park assist sensor. The description is 9E39 lines front, center, left ultrasonic sensor. When the vehicle was in reverse, the technician looked at live scan tool data and saw the park assist sensor data was erratic. Now, everybody's going to think, well, BMW, this has got to be a real high-tech fix. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? In reality, it's still just basically a car. They looked at the wiring harness and the connector. They saw no obvious faults. Ignition on, engine off. They used a voltmeter. They looked and they had voltmeter. They had power and ground at the sensor itself. And then when they looked, they saw damage to the sensor. Turns out the vehicle owner had backed into something. I guess they didn't really pay attention to their park assist sensor and caused physical damage that wasn't really visible to the naked eye until you pop the sensor out of the bumper. And, you know, they put a new sensor in it. They did do an ADAS calibration. It continues. And the system, they cleared the codes and the vehicle is repaired and it's down the road once again. A good article. I thought it was very timely regarding our conversation with George this hour. You can find more Real Fix Sure Track repairs just like this from the folks at Mitchell One at MitchellOne.com. They've got a list of them. They've got a library and they're good things to read and be aware of. But the bigger story here is with regard to ADAS. Okay, you don't think your car has it, but it does. And you've got to realize, and one of the things I wanted to mention to George, but I'll say it to you, think about it. That camera that's in the rearview mirror area looking out at the road ahead, what happens when you put a wiper blade on that's just a smidge too long? And now every time you turn the wipers on, the vehicle, the camera is going to get confused. It's going to see this blink. It's going to see a wipe right in front of its eye. And then you're going to wonder. And then you're going to take it to the mechanic. And it won't be raining that day. And unless the mechanic is sharp enough to start to look at everything, there's going to be a lot of problems and opportunity for failure. So we want to prevent that. And that's why we want to get the word out about ADOS. Thanks for joining me this hour. It's been an absolute pleasure. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.